Mr. Webb, reel 3.
The NCOs and officers who instructed you while you were at Bovington, what were they like on the whole? Were they all good, fair men?
Well, I should say they were very good. I mean, they were men that probably some of the NCOs, you know, the non-commissioned officers, were, a big percentage of them were Boer War men, you know, during the Boer War, 1900, 1902. And, I think all the officers, as far as I know, I mean, say if you was willing to soldier, I don't think there was any necessity to say that they were otherwise than quite good.
Yes. Any exceptions?
Well, yes, we used to get, of course, off parade times when you met the same officers, and they were quite nice in every respect. I mean, they weren't jumped up, you know, they were, a good many of them were regular soldiers that had been regular soldiers, you see, and probably some of them was on the retired list and rejoined, you see, yes, for training.
Tell me that story about the major who and the moustaches.
Oh, that was a captain.
Uh-huh.
Yes, we had a Captain Every in charge of my company, which was B Company of the Dorsets. And he had all us men on the parade ground. He lined us up, or at least we were lined up for his inspection. He came along. He thought we were rather a fine-looking group of men, he said. I don't know whether we were or not, because we were in civilian attire. And he came along and he told us that he was pleased to meet us, and quite a happy sort of a captain. In fact, I just like him very much. And he said, he came along with the sergeant and inspected us, and he just stopped along and he said, well, tomorrow morning, he said, don't shave that top lip. Well, we thought that was a joke, because I mean, we've been shaving as usual. And came up next morning, and of course we were using the old cutthroat razors, which the army issued to us, you see, and not too good at that. And he came along and he said, you've got, have you shaved that top lip this morning? I say, yes, sir. And he said, you know, he said, what I told you. And he said, I don't want, he said, any of my men to be captured, he said, by the Germans, and to find out, he said, that they're fighting boys. He said, instead of that, he said, I would prefer them to think that they're men. So he said, if you grow a moustache, you're up to the men's idea, I suppose.
Did you grow one?
Yes. Oh, yes, because I mean, that photograph I showed you, yes, if you remember. Yes, a little stubby moustache and waxed out in the point, you know. And he was very, very hot on that. He was... He used to sort of be proud of his men that was on parade and all these little budding moustaches that came out.
Which was the most important factor in your growing a moustache? Was it because you wanted to have a moustache, or was it because you were told you should have a moustache?
Well, no, I didn't want a moustache. I wasn't worried about that because I'd always been clean-shaven. But you see, the fact of the matter was it was an order by the army, and an officer, a commissioned officer. And, of course, I wouldn't have been had up for not growing a moustache. I should have been had up for disobeying an order.
Mm. Good. Now, another of your instructors was the very famous boxer, Bombardier Billy Wells.
That's right.
What was his job?
Well, he was a gymnastic instructor. And he used to take us on physical training. And, in the early morning parades, like some mornings they used to get up quite early. Some were within the region, well, I have known them get up at 5 o'clock in the morning, Revalley. And they'd do a session right round the area of the camp, 4 or 5 miles of doubling, running along, you know. And we thought that, of course, we weren't in full dress then. We had just jerseys and a pair of slacks on, and you went round the area. And the idea, of course, we thought was very funny at the time. In fact, I did. I thought myself, well, that was rather foolish. Well, he said, the idea is, he said, when you men get out of bed, he said, it pumps all the bad air out of you. He said, ready to do your exercises. So he said, then physical training is one of the things where it keeps you fit, which I quite agree.
Yeah. What sort of chap was he?
What about you? Well, yeah. Oh, exceptionally good. I think he was quite a good person as regards, because I mean in his boxing career he was reckoned to be a very nice type of man.
He treat the recruits?
Pardon?
How did he treat the recruits?
Very well indeed. In fact, he was very regimental. I mean, say when you were off parade, well, he was one of you, but when you're on parade, you had to do as he was told. And if you didn't, well, he always used to handle them very well. As I remember telling you about the man that wouldn't jump over the vaulting horse. He wasn't going to do that. He couldn't do it, in fact. But I always found Bombardier Billy Wells, as I knew him, that if you made an effort to jump over a try and didn't succeed...
What happened to this guy who
was
unreluctant?
Well, the one that wouldn't go, he said he was going to have the doctor and he was going to see the colonel of the regiment. And he said he wasn't going to go over. So Bombardier Billy Wells said, well, you will be going over, he said. Oh, he said, I'm not going over anyway. And they argued the point about it. So Bombardier Billy Wells looked around and said to two or four men, and said to you and you, get out of him and throw him over. And he went over. Mm. And I saw that done.
Did he get you all boxing? Did he get you boxing?
Yes, he got me on the boxing ring. And I never knew anything about boxing. I was no boxer.
What did he do?
Well, he just simply... there was the ring, you see. Of course, the idea of the army in that in those days was that if you had a grudge against any fellow soldier, you know, anything went wrong and you lost your temper and went half mad, they'd stop you. They'd say, well, now, look, we'll put you in the boxing ring, give you a pair of gloves and your opponent the same, and you'll be passed by a doctor and you'll knock one another out.
Mm. What happened on this occasion?
Well, on this occasion, you mean when I went?
Mm.
Ah, yes. Well, I was just stood up, grinning, I suppose, looking at the crowd and thinking to myself, well...
glad it's not
boxing,
me.
Boxing isn't my cup of tea. So what I did, he just turned around and he said, put them on. He threw me a pair of gloves. Well, I said, I've never done this, never done any boxing in my life. He says, now's your chance to learn. So I said, when he told me who I was to box, it was happened to be a pool man, and he was a well-known boxer. I've seen him box at the Winter Gardens at Bournemouth before I was in the army, and I know he was a very hot boxer. Anyway, I thought, I said, well, I don't know. He said, if you don't have them on with him, he said, you'll have them on with me, you see? So I thought, well, I better put them on. So I put them on, got into the ring, and the first little jab I had was on the nose. I had the nosebleed, and he said, well, that's enough, he said. Another man won.
So he made sure he didn't go too far.
No. Oh, no. He was very humane.
Good.
Yes, I think he was a very nice man, Bombardier Billy Wells.
Let's talk a bit about some of your off-duty activities. Now, when your day's training was over on the camp, what sort of things would you do on the camp after duty?
Well, you see, you finished training approximately about 4 o'clock, and you'd be brought in, you see, and... Well, you'd wait for your tea. You'd have your tea about 5, and army rations, pretty fair in conditions, not quite like you'd get in your home, but still it was quite passable. And I never had anything to find fault about it.
Mm-hmm.
And then you see what we used to do, the evening was free, unless you were detailed for fatigue work. You might be sent to say, oh, well, now look... You, they used to say on parade, you see, before we dismissed, are for fatigue tonight on peeling onions or peeling potatoes, ready for next day's meal, you see? Or do a bit of washing of the utensils, you know, what the cooks used at the cookhouse. Well, it didn't come all that much, but I mean, they had a rota of who was on and who wasn't on, and they knew who'd been on before, that you had a very, very, very fair chance.
So if you weren't on, what sort of things would you do?
Well, you'd peel onions, or you'd...
No, if you weren't on for teams, what would you do?
What I used to do, I used to go out with a pal of mine. I might go for a stroll down round the areas, which was wooded all round Morden and places like that. I'll go for a walk where we were allowed inside the bounds. You see, we were all right there. We weren't allowed down to Well, places like Wool.
No, I'm thinking about on the camp, not off the camp.
Oh, on the camp.
On the camp.
Oh, yes. Well, on the camp.
Were there canteens that you could use?
Yes, on the camp. You see, after we had our tea, we would go out and we'd probably go across to the Expeditionary Force canteen, which there was always plenty of music on there. There was always plenty of artists in the army that would give a concert. And we had a concert party there. And then somebody volunteered to get up and give a song or something like that, you see. And, of course, they had these chairs and all like that. You could sit about and just, have a good time, you know, waiting for bedtime, if you like to put it that way. And then, you see, they used to... you could go up and you could get what bit of money they used to pay you, which wasn't very much. You could go up and get your tea... a cup of tea, perhaps, a packet of biscuits, and so on. Go back to your chair, sit down, listen to the music, and that was how you spent your evenings. Or you may wander around the camp, as I say.
You said that there was a concert party there. Who was that made up of? That,
they were composed of the military, proper the army people. You see, I can't remember the name of the concert party, but I know they used to have a concert party and they used to hold it in the cinema. We had a cinema there, you see. And besides the Expeditionary Force canteen. And you could go and see a film show. Or they may put on an army concert party. And I mean to say they would be like... somebody dress up, we'll say, in more like Danny LaRue. I mean, you know, in a woman's clothes and so on.
Who was the Expeditionary Forces canteen run by? Was it an army canteen?
I should think so. Yes, I think so.
Were there any other canteens on the camp?
No, not... there was... all these people like the Church Army, the Salvation Army, ran their own individual... rendezvous, you know, like we'll say halls, where a man of that type of religion, you understand what I mean, if he's a Salvationist or if he's a Church of England or whatever it might be, he would probably go across to the Church of England if he was a Church of England man, you see, being, you know, used to it at home. And you could go and buy your biscuit and whatever you like there, you see. I mean, you could buy things, because they all had these sort of... canteens, that's what you would call them.
Which were the most popular of the church canteens?
I think the EFC, Expeditionary Force.
That canteen. Was a church canteen?
No.
No, well, which of the church canteens?
I think the church and the Salvation Army was the two most, used as regards, from a religion point. You see, the other one was worked by the army. Anybody and anyone at all. You could go in anywhere you like. I mean, say if you were a nonconformist or if you were Church of England, you could go in the Salvation Army if you like, the hostel. And they would receive you just the same and talk to you about your home and all the rest of it, you know. Have your little cup of tea and your biscuits. Mm. You could go and have a cake if you would like. Whatever you could afford to buy.
Yes. When you went off the camp... were there any voluntary organizations that provided you with canteens or any other kinds of services?
When you mean off the camp, did you mean on leave, or did you mean...
Well, if you had an evening out.
Well, yes, but you see, the evening outs just was within bounds. I mean, to say we're in the bounds of the camp, really.
Well, you used to go to Drexhall.
Very rare. Now, that was only for, as I say, probably... soldiers that was in the area. I wouldn't say it was for our camp, really.
Okay. Now, after your basic training finished at Bovington, what happened to the recruits then?
The recruit, would you prefer...
Well, talking about the trained man, how was the draft system organised?
You were paraded and put through these drills... with your drill sergeant, which was a very efficient man. He was a man that, I think he came from the Dragoon Guards. Anyway, he was a very efficient man, you know, smart and right on the top of everything. And He used to put you through the routine of your training. Mm. I mean to say, and then the officers used to come and watch, you see. And then you would be paraded, and they'd just simply say, well, you're for the draft. You'll be on the draft party. Now, they train you for several weeks under the draft. You know what I mean? It was always spoken to as the draft, in any case. And, I mean, if he gave you an order, he used to say, draft so-and-so, about turn, or draft so-and-so, you see? Mm. Well, then, actually, after that, you just simply hung around until it's time that you got drafted down into...
I see, fine. See,
yeah.
Okay, and then you left Bovington, and you went to Exmouth in Devon, where you were billeted in private homes.
Yes.
Was that common at the time?
Yes.
How did it work out?
Oh, yes. Well, it was very efficient, actually, because I don't know what the object of it really was, whether they had the accommodation for the troops, I'm sure. But when you talk about that, Kitchener's army, when they were brought up, if you remember, well, I remember what I say. Anyway, you heard, read about it, I expect, or heard about it. You see, we had a whole battalion drafted on us at Ferndown. And they...